And good morning. Welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We are coming to you live this morning, June 14th, 2025. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back right after this song.
Song for all of you liberals who believe your ways are best, who don't mind overcrowding this nation with a swarm of foreign immigrants, who don't care about the population, who don't care if it's foul on our nest. When are you ever gonna read the writing upon the wall? We got crime overtaking our cities. We got gangs taking over our streets. We keep handing out more and more welfare, though it never seems to meet their needs. What kind of culture are we cultivating? One where you never have to pull any weeds. If we don't stop this immigration, this great nation's gonna fall. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time that we close up that gate. Now can't you see how we are rapidly becoming another third world fascist state? Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. How can we ever come to any solution when all we ever do is debate? We've got to get a tighter grip on our borders. We've got to seriously legislate. And quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist. And quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on immigration. Now you know it's not too late. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time we start closing that gate. And quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist. And quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on immigration in these great United States. Let's get a grip on immigration. Now you know it's not too late. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time that we close up that gate. Can't you see how we are rapidly becoming another third world fascist police state? Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. And quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist. And quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on the immigration in these great United
And we're back, and it's coffee time, and you're listening to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. I'll bring the men on the line, and we've got, well, good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, guys.
And thank you guys for being here. Tim, why don't you start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
I'd love to. Dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we come before you this morning, and Lord, we ask your blessing upon this broadcast that wherever it might go, it might shine your light into dark corners and deep places, Lord, that it might expose the truth of things, that it might create new thoughts and new minds in your people, Lord, that lead, oh, to the throne of your grace and the throne of your redemption. Lord, we pray that you would be glorified in all things and that the words that come out of our mouth would be useful to your kingdom. We pray a blessing upon your people's families in them, Lord, that you would protect them in trying times, and Lord, that whatever comes about would be for our benefit and for your glory, Lord. We pray that you'd make your enemies a footstool this day, and Lord, we thank you that we live in times where we can see our God. We ask all this in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Tim.
Amen.
Well, there is definitely a lot to talk about this morning. It seems like, wow, and, you know, from world news to national news to probably coming to a city near you. But I think we'll go ahead and start off with just things that are happening in, the Iran missile strikes. That'd be a good place to start, I think. I was on the phone the other day, a couple days ago, and somebody says, I think Israel just bombed Iran. And it was like, okay, interesting. Didn't see that one coming, but wasn't actually that surprised either. But, what do you men know about that?
Go ahead, Will.
Go for it, Jim. No, go for it.
Well, I'll jump right in.
Okay, it's very interesting that, of course, we kind of knew that was coming. I think that, our State Department was talking about, it could be a few days, it could be this or that. When you hear those kind of things, there's some pretty serious stuff going on. And, they did a preemptive strike, which... I don't know. They were coming to the table one more time over this nuclear, stuff, and they just jumped right in there on them and basically hit them. So, and of course, now we have the normal back and forth that we're seeing. I mean, going on, Iran sent some in there what about the big boys now? You know, I mean, what are we hearing from them and that kind of stuff? So it's certainly not a simple thing as far as, the whole global stage, but it is it is what it is. I mean, we're going to have to figure out how that all works, I guess.
So here's an observation from me, and it's just that, it's just an observation. And it's interesting. We know why, but how the news coverage and the news cycle works. If you pull up, Fox News or CNN or the Drudge Report or whatever, it's interesting to me that it took no time at all that if you just read the headlines, it looks like Iran started this. Everything now is about Israel getting hit with these Iranian missiles and rockets and that sort of thing. And we have shifted away so quickly that the instigator in this is the state of Israel. You know, this preemptive strike, which, what are they preempting? I don't know. But regardless, is we've kind of the narrative moves so quickly that Israel rained hell down on Iran and Iran retaliated. You know, these were, I would go as far as saying maybe even defensive strikes against Israel is what Iran's doing. And I'm not taking Iran's side. I want to make sure I say that, but they are very quickly being made out to be the bad guy in this. And I guess what I'm saying is, if I walked up and I punched Jason in the face, Jason's going to punch me back. And if Tim jumps in and tells Jason, hey, don't fight, well, what kind of sense does that make? it makes no sense at all. And that's kind of my observation. I will say this, that I learned just before we went on air that I guess for all of the effectiveness of the Iron Dome and all of the missile defense that we have given Israel, Iran has managed to get some ordnance through that. And just, this is a headline out of Al Jazeera that I guess an Iranian missile has caused significant damage to the Israeli Defense Force headquarters in Tel Aviv. They actually were able to target that. And it looks, just looking at the pictures, it looks like they've doggone leveled the headquarters of the IDF. So that's
wow.
That's something. Yeah, that's something. And I know, Tim, you were alluding to the, you know, this is all being based on, you know, Iran developing nuclear capability. And if we stop and think about this, we've been hearing about this for, what, 20 years now? Iran is, you know, doing this. How long does it take? I'm not a physicist, but for goodness sakes, you know, you would think by now they have it, and they probably do. But the other thing that I got, too, just from some international news, is it looks like an Iranian missile also hit an Israeli nuclear site where they skied nuclear ordnance. Yeah, so I guess my point in saying that is, obviously, Iran, they're not bumpkins. They knew where to send the missiles. They have the intel as well. And they knew where to send these. If they're successfully striking the military headquarters of Israel and nuclear missile sites, this isn't random. You know, they're sending them where they need to go. So I don't know. It certainly is. Tim and I were talking, you know, if you look at the players of this and who's friendly with who, obviously, the United States government has supported Israel from its beginning. Iran's their major ally is Russia, and so it's interesting the next few days and weeks, let's see how all this plays out.
Right. Well, I think it's very provocative, and the other thing is, and you just said it, and so did the news. I mean, you can verify that, but the fact is in I don't know, I can't give you a date on it right off the, you know, right off of the top of my head, but in 2011 or 2012, BB was saying, well, our policy is not to be the first to introduce nuclear weapons into the Middle East. In other words, he didn't want, supposedly, they didn't have him. Now all of a sudden we're talking about that the estimate of their stockpile ranges between 90 and 400 nuclear warheads, and it's believed to possess a nuclear triad of delivery options by F-15 and F-16 fighters and by some submarines they've got. And, you know, it's an interesting jump from here to there. And then in the next verse, people talk about mutually assured destruction being a deterrent. And, to me, this is just a provocative move to get America involved and to get Russia involved, and it you know, maybe even on both of their parts. You know what I'm trying to say? So
well, yeah, remember just a few weeks ago we were talking about Ukraine receiving Patriot missile systems and THAAD missile systems from Israel. You know, so you have U.S. weaponry being brokered to the Ukraine through the state of Israel. I imagine that didn't make the Russians real happy. And especially when the U.S. had given the assurance of we're going to stop supplying weapons. I'm not sure. I don't believe the government of Russia. I don't believe Putin is real friendly with Israel anyways. And to have that happen and now attacking their allies, it sure is lining up. I believe that sides will be chosen.
Yeah. Well, and it's worth saying, and going back to, what was it, Iraq, the war in Iraq, all of those, you know, the weapons, the WMDs, does anybody, I haven't forgotten yet that there were never any WMDs actually.
That's right.
Brought forward. They never found it. That all was to protect the world from weapons of mass destruction. Now, you know, did they have weapons? I'm sure they did, but, none of that was ever found, and you made a good point there in saying, I don't know, how long does it take to develop this nuclear weapon thing with all these physicists and all that kind of stuff? And I'm not saying they did or didn't have them. I'm just saying it sure makes me scratch my head. So,
You know. Well, I think that threat, that narrative that, you know, Iran the Iranian people are incredibly westernized, you know, and educated. It's not like they're hillbillies with a, you know, a moonshine still trying to make a bomb. You know, these are advanced people. And I would think, by now, they would be to where they need to be as far as making a nuclear weapon. I think it's a boogeyman. I think it's just a threat is what it is. I think it's a narrative that is used for times like this, that when a new war needs to be started. You know, this has been planted in our head for decades now, that Iran is bad and they are a threat to the United States and to the Western world. And I'm not saying they're not. I'm not in no way am I trying to sing the praises of Iran. I just in my view, I'm looking at it through question the narrative. And the narrative here is this is our natural sworn enemy. And I would you guys, I mean, Tim, you're a little older than me. Can you tell me, I know the hostage situation, you know, with Carter and all of that, but is there ever been an attack by the Iranians on U.S. soil or U.S. interest? I don't recall one off the top of my head.
Not a credible one that I can remember, but, you know, I could be mistaken, yeah, too. But I don't recollect anything over the top like that. I mean, there's always these little subgroups that who funded them and who did this and who did that.
Sure.
But I don't remember anything like a major over the top in your face strike against America. I mean, the Shah of Iran back in the 70s was very pro-American, you know, and
very pro.
And he was one of our, and we basically threw him under the bus and backed up and ran over him a couple of times. You know, I mean, it was like, there were a lot of things. They don't, basically what you see over there is they don't want stability over there. There's no call for it. And it's been that way for a lot of years over there, but we're not going to change it. And I think a lot of times my attitude or my opinion over there is it's like, you know what, you guys just work it out amongst yourselves. We don't really care. Just leave us out of it. And, you know, if you get us into it, you're going to wish you hadn't. So, but that's, and I think that's kind of just unilateral, you know. It's like, we don't care.
Yeah.
So what are we supposed to think that they took out all the nuclear bombs in the first attack that Israel attacked Iran with? You would think that if this is what they were so scared of and that they had these bombs and everything and that Iran's going to retaliate against Israel, that they would have just maybe used one of them. I mean,
yeah.
What are they saving it for? You look at it and it's like, it stinks. And I think that, I think we really got to read between the lines, because what they're telling us isn't the truth and it's not the whole story.
It's theater, Jason.
It is.
That's all that it is.
Yeah.
It's just theater. It's scripted. And, yeah, I'm going to get off the subject just for a minute, just because Tim brought up something that's really interesting that I think is worth saying. You mentioned weapons of mass destruction, Tim, in Iraq, and that was the whole excuse. You know, Colin Powell, you know, told us that, you know, there is this German intelligence that there's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And, you know, Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, you know, but all of a sudden we transitioned from that narrative that primed the pump to get the engine going, that we're going to go to war in the Middle East, and now we had to go to Iraq because they have weapons of mass destruction. And if you stop and think about this, there was no threat against you and me on using weapons of mass destruction. What were they going to do, kill each other? They were going to use it against Iraqi people, but we had to go to war there. Well, I'm going to tell you, there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They were. There was sarin gas. There were all sorts of things that we gave them when they were at war with Iran. Because when we supported the Shah and we turned our back on him, we started supporting Saddam Hussein in the in Iraq. And Saddam Hussein was a trained CIA paramilitary operative going back to the 1950s. And we used him just like we had used the government of Iran. And we supported the Iran-Iraq war. Iraq was our ally. We gave them jets. We gave them bombs. We gave them guns. We gave them ammunition. And we gave them weapons of mass destruction. And we allowed them to have it right up until the point that we needed to use that against them because we needed a new war front. And we said they have weapons of mass destruction. And they did. they did have weapons of mass destruction that said Uncle Sam all over them. And prior to us going into Iraq, the United States military, the Army, you have to trust me on this. The United States Army moved the weapons of mass destruction, the gas that was in Saddam Hussein's arsenals that we controlled. Months before we went into Iraq, it was moved into Syria. And it stayed into Syria up until the point that we decided it was time for Bashar Assad to no longer be the leader. And that's when the narrative started happening that he was using weapons of mass destruction against his own people. And Syria did have weapons of mass destruction, the same stuff that Iraq had had that we had supported back in the 1980s. My whole point in saying all of this is to go along, Jason, with what you're saying. It's just theater. They're just using this stuff to have nonstop war and chaos over in the Middle East. And as patriotic Americans, we need to not fall in the trap of the flag waving of let's go send our boys to die there. I don't know. I'm going to shut up now. I don't know what that may not be what we need to talk about, but that's certainly what I'm thinking this morning.
Well, and it's worth saying that, you know, that's some more of that. As soon as the military industrial complex starts to grind down, that's the pump. You know, I mean, the theater is the pump. And, of course, it's very convenient that those groups of people over there, and there's so many of them, you can't even keep track of them all. You know, you got the Sunnis, you got the Houthis, you got this, you got that. And I think that there's just many of them over there, but, you know, it's very convenient that they're there to use for grist in the mill anytime you need to just crank the old industrial complex back up. And any excuse will do. And I totally agree with your assessment on the WMDs. I mean, that's the rest of the story. Yes, they were hoovered up and moved away, and it was our gear that was over there. I mean, you know, but, you know, and, but they couldn't find it because, if they'd have found it, it had our name all over it. That would be good.
That's right.
You know, so
that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Importantly, and I'm, once again, I'm not a fan of any of these people. I'm a fan of our people. But Saddam Hussein had to die because of what he knew. I mean, he had to go. And Ron Paul, God bless him, you know, he had the guts. He was alone on the floor of Congress, but if you remember, Tim, and you may remember better than me, but he stood alone and read into the congressional record the fact that, and I'm going back to the original Iraq War in 91, I think it was 91, where he read the intelligence that the State Department of the United States gave Saddam Hussein permission to go into Kuwait. And, yeah. And that was, you know, what was used as an excuse to go to war over there the first time. And Ron Paul had the guts to be able to stand up and say, well, this war was manufactured by us. We gave them permission. Anyways.
Yeah. So it's a continuing legacy of upset over there that goes on just to keep the world stage, you know, busy. I mean, and keep all that going on. I think we see that. It doesn't change the fact that people do die in these things, and that
absolutely,
like you said, we don't need to send our boys over there to there's no win, there's no loss, there's just a change of faces and a change of ideologies, but, you know, it's left at a state where it can change again next week. All we got to do is push the right buttons, you know, and I think that, I think that's what we see. I mean, I see that in Iran. I mean, you have that Arabic Islamic thing going on over there in Iran. We're basically looking at the fact that the Iranians are Persian. I don't know, you know, a lot of people don't understand that. They're basically, I don't know what you want to call them, white people. I mean, I don't know any other word for it. They are not, as a nation, or never have been, as a national group of people, Islamic. Basically, only 10 or 12% of the entire population, as I understand it, is Islamic. The rest of them aren't. So when you see that kind of stuff, that, which is why one of the things BB was talking about in one of his things was, oh, now's the time to rise up and throw off your, your oppressors. Yeah. And again, it's one of those, I don't know that I have any dog in the fight or anything like that, but they all understand what's going on over there and how to play it, you know, so, and they're all part of the same group.
I'll go down a rabbit trail for just a second. And this, I'm speaking outside of my bailiwick now. So, Tim, I'll defer to you or Jason, but I think I'm going to be pretty spot on in what I say. You know, I'm going back to, like E. Raymond Capp and the history of our people. If memory serves me, the Scythians, the pre-runners of the Anglo-Saxon people came out of Iran. And went towards, you know, what is now modern day Russia. But, and I'm not, once again, I'm not trying to say that we need to wave the flag for Iran, but if we look at our history, kind of to go along with what you were saying, as far as the Persian people being more or less white, I believe, as far as the archaeological record and what is and what we've been taught, that is where the Scythians came from, that region, before they headed toward the Caucasus, to cross the Caucasus to go to Europe. Yeah,
that's what I understand too, as well. Is they were there. They were a group in Iranian. They were equestrian people. They were known throughout the world for training horses at that time, and you look at the pictures of a lot of those people over there, and it's like then it shocked me just looking at pictures of Iranian people over there. It's like, whoa, there's white people over there. I didn't know that for a long time.
They're not Arab.
No, yeah. They're not.
Yeah, they're not Arab.
Go ahead. Well, and I understand that there's still just there's pockets of different people that you can go into different villages or towns or whatever you want to call them. And that it's, you know, white skin, blonde hair, blue eyes. And I've seen a couple of pictures of it. It kind of just blows you away because you think about them just all being a bunch of Muslims over there. And yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
You know, I know we've talked about it, but the Syrian people are very closely related to the Iranian people, and that's cousins or whatever you want to call it. That's why they've been perpetual allies over the years. And I don't mean what's going on now. I'm talking about the Alawite kind of Christian population that was in Syria. And I think about Bashar Assad, who's now the former leader. But if you looked at that guy, he was like 6'3", white, and had blue eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you didn't get to see him very much on television because I think they want you to think that he's, you know, a camel riding raghead. And it's just not the case.
Right.
But anyway, that's probably
that's too, exactly the case. I agree. It took me, I remember years ago and talking about it, and somebody's like, somebody that was a listener started sending me pictures and some stuff, and it's like, man, they really painted that in a different picture. They the deception was real as far as it blew me away.
They never let you hear him speak either.
No.
And the reason they never let you hear him speak is because he has a British accent and he is a British trained doctor. And, you know, those are things that just never get told to you of, you know, who this guy really was or is. And because they want you to have a mental picture, and the mental picture is that this is a raghead dictator that's, you know, killing his own people. And it just wasn't true.
I think he was an eye doctor, wasn't he?
He was. I always get those confused, ophthalmologist or whatever it was. But, yeah, he was an eye doctor that was trained in London.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you go back and look, if you want to do something, you can go back and pull up. You can pull up photos on the internet and go back into the 70s and the 80s and pull up pictures of just people over there and take a look at the way they dress. Take a look at, you actually would have a little difficulty differentiating. It doesn't look like the head of a lot of these regimes and everything. They're putting faces on the head of these regimes that are not, typical of the population over there. They make sure to do that. They don't want you to have any association or anything like that. And what's being done in a hole over there is it's twisted. You know, I mean, there's no other word for it. It's just like they're twisting the narrative all the way around. So it makes getting clarity and getting definition out of these things very difficult.
They're also using century-old, thousands of years old, really, tribal ethnic groups against each other that are just these long-seated hatreds and biases toward one another, and they know how to exploit that to churn up chaos against each other with these little bitty events that happen. And the next thing you know, you got a civil war and this warring fashion against that warring fashion. And that leads to that instability in the region that allows for the right people that are willing to play the game to get put into power. And I think that's what's happened in Syria right now. You know, we've talked about it, but we went from a westernized nation that had things like running water and indoor plumbing and electricity to ISIS warlord ruling that country right now. Well, the reason why that's important for people to understand is that westernized country, they weren't friendly to the United States and to Israel, but the ISIS warlord is. And he's going to do the bidding of those people that are putting money in his pocket. And I know that sounds crazy because, you know, Israel, the state of Israel, these Jews supposedly hate these terrorists that are these Islamists. Why would they do that? Well, remember last week we talked about Israel is arming ISIS to come in and overthrow Hamas. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that, you know, we've both used, all three of us have said they. Well, let's remember who they are. That's what we need to remember. And that takes us right back to what's happening right now with this preemptive strike with Iran. And I'm going to ask you guys, what is the preemptiveness of this? I would think that if Iran was ready to press the button and touch off a missile, this is all we would hear. This is all we would hear in the news cycle is they're getting ready to do it. They're getting ready to do it. I haven't heard that.
No, I haven't.
Have y'all?
No.
Now, I think that was the point Jason was making a minute ago, is the fact that, you know, what are they saving it for? I mean, it's not that I'm a warmonger or that I'm anxious to see anything like that happen, but it's more like just a statistical viewpoint of, you know, if you're waiting for the optimum moment, when is that? You know, so
yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, I had somebody, I was talking with somebody yesterday, and they said, man, I wish Iran would just went ahead and push the button a day sooner. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about it. It's like, okay, it's just.
Is the answer to that question, the reason why they haven't pushed the button is because there's not a button to push?
I don't think there is a button to push.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's what we're being told. And Tim and Jason, maybe y'all know better, but the IAEA, I know they've been in and out of Iran for 10, 15 years. And they've yet to come back and say they're developing a nuclear bomb.
Right, right.
And you would think, you know, this is a UN-driven organization. You would think, you know, out of all those peaceniks that you know, don't want nuclear proliferation, they would ring the bell and say there's problems in Iran, and we haven't heard that. It's, if you really stop and think about it, it's just the state of Israel and their controlled media that tells us that Iran is developing a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
So then you got to be thinking, what do they want? Some more land? Do they want some more, you know, is it a diversion? Is it, you know, do they want to take over Iran?
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, this is, you know, we just got through with the anniversary of the USS Liberty. And, you know, we've been talking about that recently. And if you remember what was going on in 1967 was the Six-Day War. And Israel was trying to take part of Jordan. They were trying to take parts of Egypt, you know, the Golan Heights and all of that. And automatically, you know, I mean, within hours of this supposed preemptive strike, there was talk that they're going to go to Egypt. There's talk that they, you know, we know they've been in Syria. Is this just a land grab? Is that what's going on before our eyes and we're not really seeing?
Yeah, that's what I've wondered too, because Iran, they've got for over there, it's a huge chunk of property. It's and they've got a lot of natural resources over there. So it's you just wonder. And, you know, all the Gulf that they have, I think it's the Persian Gulf up there, that coastal trading grounds. It's a prime piece of real estate. So that's what makes you wonder. It's like, huh, what is actually going on there?
The Strait of Hormuz. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, there's a lot of warmongering going on. And the other thing that we talk about, Iran pushing a button, you know, and we also have that shoe kind of fits on the other foot, too. I mean, we know now that they have a stockpile of nuclear weapons, even though, according to treaty and everything else, they're not supposed to have. I mean, nobody talks about that, but why haven't they pushed the button? I mean, if you thought that Iran was going to nuke you, why isn't there, you know what I'm saying? It's like, how surgical strike, or are they trying to save the land or something else? You don't want to contaminate it, you know, you want to grab it.
There you go.
Just a quick thought.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on. Well, moving on to, we've had some ice raids this recently. Well, I guess let's start with the protests in L.A. That has been just interesting. Grabbing a lot of people, throwing them off. Mexicans that think that Mexico is so great, but they don't want to leave the United States. Destruction, chaos, lawlessness. I mean, it's an out war out there.
Wow. Yeah. Where do you start? Yeah.
I don't know. One of the things that I've just been watching the videos, and I don't know how many people out there have been watching the stuff that's been taking place, but man, the vehicles and stuff that they're destroying. The ice vehicles, the fires, the bricks. I mean, and you know, it's just it, to me, it is kind of interesting of how these there's always a pile of bricks to be thrown wherever one of these events has taken place. It's kind of interesting, but you see these windshields being broken out. Earlier it was the helicopters. I was watching the helicopters bring in cases of smoke grenades and tear gas grenades and just the riots. I mean, just the destruction that they're doing. It's burning buildings down, burning cars. It looks like a third world country in street riots. It's stuff that you see in a far off land, and it's like, man, it's right here in our backyard right now, and it's just. It's crazy. And then one of the things that I did notice, I was watching some of the video clips and just, some of these libs just talking about what is happening and being interviewed. Okay, what do you think of the riots? What do you think of the the windshields being bashed in and the vehicles being burned and stuff like that. And you know, the reply was, well, I think that this is, you know, I think people have the right to express themselves. And this is just, it's a form of expression. And I mean, you talk about just, you know, an insane group of people. It's like, okay, we want you to be able to express ourselves, but what about when it's coming down your street, or it's in your backyard, or in your front yard, or, you know, coming through your window? Is that going to be just a form of expression? It's like, oh my goodness, you know, what is wrong with these people? But I think that they do have mental illness, and I think they're just off the rocker. They're nuts. But it is absolutely just chaos in the streets. And it's, you know, coming to a town near you. I think we're up to about, 1,800 cities that have signed up for protest as of today. And it's growing, you know. Yeah, go ahead. What do you guys think of everything that's going on there?
I thought it was interesting that the mewling governor of California, Newsom, he says it's his duty to represent the illegal alien or the illegal immigrants. That's what the word he used, who elected him. That's a mouthful. I mean, it was just, and you've got them and the mayor Karen, whatever last name. I can't say it, but you know, oh, it's not that bad. It's mostly peaceful. It's everything else. And then, you know, you watch the live videos, like you said, it looks like a third country over there. Everything's burnt. And I think it's interesting that we talked about the fact here just not too terribly long ago about the EVs being basically portable ordnance, you know, I mean, for bombs and fires and everything else. And, it was worth noting that Waymo cars were called in there to that one area and it lit on fire. I mean, we see all this stuff going on. And it's just like, yeah, they're using the weapons that it's asymmetric warfare. I mean, there isn't any other word for it. They're waving their flag and taking ground. So when you see that kind of stuff going on, you know, if somebody rolled across the border down there, plants a flag somewhere and starts blowing stuff up, is that an act of war? And it sounds like it to me.
I got a lot on my mind when it comes to this. First, going back to something you said, Jason, and if that's the new freedom of expression, if that's what they're going to say is, you know, destruction and violence is freedom of expression, then I say game on. We're all, let's have our freedom of expression. That's my opinion. That's number one. I'm going to ask you guys, up and around where you're at, you got to remember where I'm at. I'm down here in Texas. I have been disheartened over the last few days to see a lot of Mexican flags flying in people's yards that were not there before all this stuff started. Y'all seeing any of that where you're at?
No.
Not
I'm not here at all. Okay. I haven't seen one.
This week I was kind of in the corridor between San Antonio and Austin, and I was on some side streets, and I was going through an area that's just multiple, just rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of apartment complexes, you know, 8-10-story apartment complexes. And it amazed me that it looked like I was at a Cinco de Mayo festival.
Really?
They were just Mexican flags. Yes, they were Mexican flags. All along Interstate 35, you can see them from the interstate. And the good thing, I think, is probably in a counter protest, there were a lot of American flags also flying that I don't think probably were normally there. I think it was just in response to what was being done. And I know in my gut, but I just kept – yesterday, you know, I was thinking about this strongly, is this is a visible divide of where we're at as far as this country goes, that there are those that are going to fly the flag of a foreign nation, and there's going to be those that fly the flag of this nation. And I think that's very evident in the video that we've seen from L.A. You know, y'all were just, Tim, you were rightfully talking about that when you plant flags, when you fly flags, that is a symbol of conquest, our intent to conquer.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting to me to see that being done so openly. And the reason I say that is there is a president that's sitting in the White House that is imperfect. And I know there's plenty of people that don't like Trump, and that's fine. I'm not talking about Trump as the man. I'm talking about why he was elected. And he was elected by the majority of the American people to do something about the alien invasion. And the response, you know, he talks about these criminals, he talks about violent criminals, he talks about the street gang and the gang members. And now on the world stage, the very things that he said were the problems with these people are being shown to us, with the destruction and the looting and the burning and the flying of these foreign flags. To me, whether this is on purpose, whether it's staged, whether it's scripted, this sure seems like it's a trigger for further division and split. I don't know. Is that making sense, what I'm trying to say? Like, this is – we were already there. You know, the powder was already put and packed, and they're just waiting for a spark. And I'm wondering, is this it? Is this the spark? You know, we know we're a divided nation. We, you know, looking at those flags, the Mexican flags and the American flags, I know we're divided. I'm not kidding myself. But I know that the charge has been packed and the pan's been primed. Is this going to be the spark that sets it off? And I'm going to ask you guys that. Like, what are y'all thinking?
I think it's very possible. I think that you look at this, you know, you see these protesters, even the people that are protesting, you know, the ICE raids, you know, even the I call them the libtards, but, you know, they're holding the signs that are saying no borders, no prisons, no immigration, no ICE. You know, they're fighting against this. They are fighting against what, you know, and, you know, out here in Colorado, there's been ICE raids that are taking place, and they're taking place on a regular basis. They're going after Russians, Ukrainians, Venezuelans, gang members, murderers, sex offenders, rapists, people that are, you know, stealing money from other people's bank accounts, fraud, scam artists, stuff like that. They're getting rid of the criminals, and they're grabbing them, and within 24 hours, they're out of the country. And, you know, that's a good riddance. That's, you know, that's what's taking place. They're making it out to be that it is the, you know, it's the families that are working on farms and lumber mills and packing plants and stuff like that, dairies, you name it, that, you know, these are the people that are being, you know, good, hardworking. They portray them as just, you know, these good, hardworking Christian Catholic people that, you know, love their family and love America, and they're the ones that are being deported. And that's just not the case. I mean, I haven't seen any of that. I've seen, you know, the criminals that are the ones that are that they're going after. And so it's obvious that I think it's like what we were talking about earlier. It's this Jewish controlled media narrative. We got to look at, you know, who is behind it. And I believe that it is, you know, Israel. That's what they do, is they sow those seeds of dissension. They continue to cause problems. They cause chaos. They love war. They love destruction. We've got to follow the money. There's a lot of stuff that's coming out of the funding that is going into, you know, funding these protests. And it's like when they are the way that they're protesting, I think that they, you know, I think a good word for them is would be terrorists. They're doing what terrorists do. They're causing chaos. They're burning buildings down. They're causing, you know, every day this is, you know, turning into it's growing, but millions and millions of dollars every day of destruction that's taken place. And it's I think that it's very possible that this is the beginning of or has it started? It's war is what it is. And with what is coming, you know, if these 18, I think they got 1800 protests for all set up all across the United States. I mean, we got one here in Fort Collins. They're going to have them in Denver, Boulder. Every city of any size around here has got one going on, and they're having huge ones in especially these sanctuary cities. And you know, they're calling them, okay, it's going to be a peaceful protest. You know, well, all these protests, yeah, they're not going to say that it's going to be a violent one. It's, you know, that's that just happens. And that's what they can turn into. And yeah, I think that it's very possible. I mean, you think there's a lot of stuff. I'll let you jump in there, Tim, and then we can talk about it some more. But you know, that's kind of my two cents and.
It's all awesome points. I mean, whenever a battle takes place, the first thing that goes in to any battlefield or preemptive work is psyops. I mean, and that's what we've been seeing moving up to now. Psyops always calls something that it's not. A violent demonstration that's burning down your cars and doing all that is called a peaceful, mostly peaceful demonstration. We have agent provocateurs in there. I mean, they're talking about, there's been some talk about arresting Newsom for aid comfort and for not fulfilling his role as a protector of the state that he was elected to defend. And, you know, when we see all the, and he doesn't care. I mean, I watched an interview with, well, arrest me then. I mean, I don't care. I'm starting the whole thing. You know, it's like these things go on and it's, psyops brings about one of two things. It either polarizes people or it brings about indifference. You know, I mean, oh, well, whatever. It's just the indifference is an issue that creates a lack of action on people's parts. And, you know, if you can continually harp on that on the mass media and on everything else, people begin to think it's a nothing burger or it's a non-deal. But in the meantime, we've got people out there. I mean, one of the things that occurs to me going back to the flag thing is, you know, the first thing you do when you take over a ship or a fort or an enemy-held position is strike their colors. I mean, you don't want their flag on something that you're holding. So what we're seeing here is we're seeing this striking of colors, this psyop action going on, and it leaves people in a quandary. And it's not about Republican, Democrat. It's about Christ and Antichrist, you know, and that's the boiling it down to the base thing. We are a Christian nation, and those people are not Christian. They only want madness and pandemonium. Look at their country of origin. What's going on there? I mean, you know, look at the things that are happening there. You think that you want to go live there? We were talking the other day about one of the things over in New Jersey. They had an ICE detention center hit, four detainees escaped, and they're trying to find them. And they were upset because dinner was late, you know? I mean, and that was the whole purpose of the thing. Those people are foreign actors in a sovereign country. They don't have due process. They don't have the same rights as you do, and you should be glad they don't, because otherwise, what benefit is there for you to be a citizen or anything else? They're left with, you know, and of course, the polarization or the psyops tries to say, well, they have the right to all the things that you have the right to, And it's like, so if somebody kicks your door down, they can come and eat dinner at your table with your family and write checks out of your checkbook. I mean, no. And, you know, there's when you take it back to those sort of things, you begin to see the divergence in the way it works. And it's definitely already started, I think. I mean, and I think given just like the fact that we see that ammunition going down there toward Colorado Springs, that we see some of these other things going on, ask yourself why? Why was that moving around? Why was that going somewhere like that? What was the, you know, the purpose of that? It sure wasn't for target practice, I don't think. So, you know, it's, So they're definitely in a prepared state. And is this the trigger? It very well could be. I don't know. But there's those things going on. So
I'll pile on real quickly and just some things that came to mind while both you gentlemen were speaking. With Tim mentioning, you know, these are Christ followers and the Antichrist. One of the things that's interesting to me is, you know, Jason's mentioned that there's at least 1,800 planned protests that we know about happening in the United States today. And what they're calling this, these series of protests, are the No Kings. Yeah. That's their battle cry. No Kings protest. And the interesting thing to me is, you know, one of the battle cries of the American Revolution was no king but King Jesus. You know, with Tim mentioning that we're a Christian nation, that was part of our founding, really the bedrock of our founding, is we fought a revolution for that freedom of being free men, based on the Christian aspect of we only find freedom and liberty through Christ. And it's interesting to me that they're kind of co-opting that phrase, that no king but King Jesus, and they sure are leaving the Christ out of it.
Yeah.
It, you know, they are just saying no kings. And I think in our face, for those that know, you know, we're looking at that and saying, this is just in our face. You know, they're taking this time honored phrase of revolution, of righteous revolution, of a Christian revolution, and they're taking Christ right out of and shoving it down our throat. So that was just one of the things that was on my mind. I want to just circle back to, well, Jason, you were talking about the pallets of. Go ahead.
What were you gonna say? And I just wanted to jump in on that and say that the website is nokings.org. And I've been checking it out a couple of days. You can actually, it's got a map. You can type in your zip code, your street address, and you can see where, you know, where your local protest is going to be. And it says it's got an about section, and I'm just wanted to read that. It says about No Kings. On June 14th, Flag Day, President Trump wants tanks in the street and a made-for-TV display dominance for his birthday, a spectacle meant to look like strength, but real power isn't staged in Washington, and it rises up everywhere else. No Kings is a nationwide day of defiance. From city blocks to small towns, from courthouse steps to community parks, we're taking action to reject authoritarianism and show the world what democracy really looks like. We're not gathering to feed his ego. We're building a movement that leaves him behind. The flag doesn't belong to President Trump. It belongs to us. We're not watching history happen. We're making it. On June 14th, we're showing up everywhere he isn't to say no thrones, no crowns, no kings. And to me, it's like, okay, I can agree with some of the stuff what they say, but to me, it sounds really stupid. I don't know if that's just me or not, but...
Well, it's certainly aggravating.
It's
like, did anybody put any thought into this? I mean, it's like you know, did you guys have a fifth grade black kid write this or what? I mean,
Well, think about who they're trying to incite, Jason.
Exactly. and they're doing a good job. I mean, and they're effective at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's working.
I'm looking at them, and I just want to. I'm looking at I'm looking at Wyoming, right? And I mean, like that's the. I think I'm right. Like, Wyoming has the least number of people in the lower 48.
Yeah.
And what is there? There's 10, 15 of these protests going on in Wyoming. Like, I just, that's crazy to me. There would be that many, you know, in a state like that. The next point I was going to make ties in perfectly with what we're talking about, Jason, right now, is you take a look at this website and the sophistication of the website with interactive maps. And you look at the website, and it has, I don't know, 5 or 6 different subheadings up top of an about, an attend, a toolkit, trainings, art, social, live stream, partners. I mean, on this, you can download templates for posters and graphics and that sort of thing, that this is a ready-made website for
protesters.
Revolution.
Yeah.
For protest, you know, and if you can't make it, you can live stream it. You can they're wanting people for social media warriors to jump on social media and start churning out and pumping out real time, you know, social media posts that just kind of furthers the narrative. And I'm looking at this, and we know at least one. I'm sure you guys have heard about what was her name, Christy Walton, Sam Walton's daughter, who has put
Walmart,
out these newspaper ads. Walmart heiress, you know, billionaire that's at least helped paying for some of this. But so I'm not saying it's not possible, and I'm sure it is possible, but this is pretty sophisticated in the matter of, what is it, 5 days, 6 days that this has been going on, that they were able to throw this stuff together and have it ready to roll. And I think that goes right along with the pallets of bricks. And the pallets of cinder blocks.
Exactly.
And how about randomly in L.A., you know, a truck rolling up that's got several thousand dollars worth of, like, riot-rated face mask, and they just start passing them out to people. I mean, did you guys see that?
Yes.
Yeah. That was where did that all come from?
I wonder if they're if they're selling franchises. Like, can you get in there and can you buy like a county or a town or something? And
that's funny.
That's the way they're marketing it, and that's what it looks like. It looks like you're gonna buy. You can have this area, and this can be your area, and you can, you know, you raise so much money, you get so many pallets of bricks, and if you raise this much money, then, you know, we'll send you a couple crates of masks. And I wonder if they, you know, do you have to use, like, DuPont spray paint or, you know, I wonder if, I mean, seriously, you look at this, and it's like what you said. It's like, this is create a terrorist. Here's your personal terrorist franchise coming to a town near you.
You know, it's like a business, right?
It is.
I mean, that's what it is. It's a business.
Yeah, you're going to get your perks and your all that.
Download the app. Stream here. Everybody wants to be famous.
Yeah,
5 minutes of fame. Exactly.
Yeah.
The other thing that was interesting is this Singham guy, he's been called, I guess they've got a subpoena out on him to come in and talk about all the money that he's been throwing into this whole deal. And, you know,
Tim, who is that guy?
Well, he's his name's Neville Singham, and he had a big business in 2017, sold for $785 million. He's married to a gal named Jody Evans, who runs Code Pink, which it's kind of comical. That's a feminist grassroots organization that supposedly is against U.S. wars and militarism. Well, yeah, it's good to have supporting peace and human rights initiatives. It's great to have something like that. You don't want people fighting back against this whole bill. Just let them come in and take the country over. But they're real left-wing, my words. But this Singham guy, he works, and he's in the same building the propaganda wing of the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, and
well, that's kind of
this money. In
it. Coincidence? Yeah. I think not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's yet another one for you. It's like, okay, so do we have some of that going on? Lots of, and like you said, they control a website up in a week. Well, it's amazing what you can get done if you've got millions of dollars. You don't mind spending a lot of it. You can really accomplish a lot in a short time. So,
I on that Neville Singham guy, something that was interesting to me, just reading into him of his background and stuff like that. Just you talk about usual suspects. This guy's been tracked. He's pumped millions of dollars into South Africa for the ruling ANC and the communists there. So a lot of these big, you see these rallies and stuff they have where they're singing Kill the Boer and all of that. The money to hold those, that's not coming from the coffers of the South African government because, you know, they don't have, they can't even keep the electricity on. But apparently this guy through the CCP in China, they're the ones who are flipping the bill for this. And so when they're these communist agitators, and I'm putting that in full spectrum of they're able to get 40, 50,000 people in a soccer stadium to talk about killing the white people. Well, that's kind of what's going on right now in L.A., isn't it? That same sort of action of they're getting all of these people in the street, and they're certainly – they may not be singing Kill the Boer, but they're certainly talking about the colonial Americans and how they took over the Mexican land. It's kind of the same story of what happened in South Africa.
Yeah, and talking about money angle on this thing, there's a lot of these people that are rent riders too. You know, I mean, that's going on. So that costs huge money. There's all kinds of stuff going out, and they're, yeah. So somebody's running the narrative and paying for the narrative, and yeah, it's a real deal. It's happened, and like you said, the usual suspects. So I would remind everybody once again that that DC museum has a whole floor devoted to programming. You know, that's where those. Mm-hmm. You know, so what's that all about? I mean, there's a whole bunch of actors, bad actors, working on this whole deal. It's not some kind of sprang up grassroots, you know, podunk movement. I mean, there's definitely organization, there's definitely funding, there's definitely all those kind of things going on. So, I think a word for that might be war machine. You know, back to science again.
Well, and it's somebody just sent me a poster for and it's just this is just locally to my area. And it says it's a poster and it says, "We the people say no kings in America. Please join us in helping save democracy. June 14th, 2025, all across northern Colorado, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Windsor, Colorado. That's, I don't know, 30 miles from here. Greeley, that's about 30 minutes, 40 minutes from here. Fort Collins, that's, I don't know, less than 10. Loveland, 15, 20 minutes. Berthoud, and the list goes on and on. I mean, they're having these things everywhere.
Yeah.
And it is, to me, it's interesting because it's like, how fast, I mean, it was, you know, all of a sudden I heard it was like, oh, there's going to be 800 protests. And then it was 1,400 and then it was 1,800. And it's like, it happened at the snap of a finger. So to me, it just tells me that it was something that had been planned long before. And I think that I don't think it's something that happened overnight. And I look back and it's like, I mean, this stuff has been just popping up fast. But I think that it'd been that they'd been planning this for quite some time.
So I got a theory. You want to hear it?
I do.
Okay. Think about wildfires, right? You got your hot spots, and what you're trying to do is contain an area, and you don't want it to spread. You don't want the wind to pick up an ember and take it on the wind and start up a different spot, right? You try to contain it in one centralized area and put it out. And the fear is always it's going to spread. and you're going to not have the manpower to deploy to hit those hotspots that have spread. So we're up to 1,800 now. If it was just Philadelphia and L.A. and New York and Dallas and Houston and, you know, Denver and places like that, okay, you can move adequate manpower and resources in to contain those. But you're talking about 1,800 geographical areas. If 5% of those break off the wrong way, that's 90 hotspots across the country. And I think in my mind, that's the plan. Does that make sense? What I'm saying is,
yeah,
if you spread it out geographically across the country, it just overwhelms the ability for the response.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think I think that's the plan of the enemy. I think that that's what they want. I really think that that's what they intend on happening. I mean, you think about it. It's like out of those groups, out of, you know, 1,800 protests, I mean, there's going to be some agent provocateurs in there at some point that are going to do something to try to get something started. Who knows? What's it going to start with? Is it going to start with a brick being thrown? Is it going to start with burning a car down, burning a building down? Places like I keep thinking of places like, you know, Denver could be something that really could erupt and things could change fast. But then, you know, thinking like Detroit and Kansas City and Chicago and, mm-hmm. you know, places like that. I mean, we've seen what has happened. Just a couple of years ago with, you're paid so much money for breaking a window, you're paid so much money for burning a car, and, you know, you're paid so much money for burning a building. And that's all stuff that came out. I was downtown Chicago during the BLM protests and talking with cab drivers that were telling me, it's a money deal and you get paid so much money. Well, one guy was telling me, I didn't want to have anything to do with it, but I sure would have liked the money. And I'm like, you're talking to him about the money. And it's like, yeah, you get so much money if you break a window, you get so much money if you burn a car down. And it's like this. And it's like everybody knew on the streets, everybody knew what it was worth and they all knew how to get paid. And so, I mean, it was not at all what the media was portraying it as. But things like that, we know that there's billions behind this. So it's something that could happen and just.
And they know, Jason, that there's not going to be any jail time.
Exactly. Yep.
There's not going to be any repercussions for it. That. And what you were talking about with the BLM riots, that was a known fact before the riot started. You know, that they were being told these agitators were, you know, you're going to go get processed and immediately released to go back out and wreak more havoc, and that's what happened. You know, that's not a thing of conspiracy. That's a proven fact. And it wasn't just one. It wasn't just Los Angeles County. It was Minneapolis. It was Los Angeles. It was Portland. It was Seattle. It was Atlanta, Georgia. It was Denver, all Chicago. So what is the chances that in all of these major population centers where these BLM riots just happened, that everyone agreed they just weren't going to prosecute these guys? They were going to PR them and send them right back out the door. And we know there were incidences where the same guys got picked up two or three times and put right back out on the street. So, you're going to get a paycheck. You got to think, if you're full of hatred towards our country, if you're full of hatred towards our people, and all you want to do is go out and rape and rob and loot and burn, and you know you're going to get a paycheck and you're not going to have to spend any time in jail, what would stop these people from doing that? And that should be expected in this sort of stuff, too, of what's going on here.
Yes.
Well, and there's a organization is definitely indicated here. I mean, the simple fact that, you know, it's a concerted effort. It's not like it's not like the Revolutionary War started at Concord Green and spread out from there. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, the whole nation's lighting up all at the same time. That is
sure
an act of aggression that is not only controlled and manipulated, but contrived. I mean, it's an organizational effort that requires that. And evidently, we have some of our officials realize it, too. One of them was Ron DeSantis down there, the Florida governor, you know, saying, hey, if you're driving on the street, mobs are trying to control your car and threaten you. If you run over some of them, don't worry about it. You know, I mean, we have one of the things I noticed was as I was looking at the parade review and some videos on that, and they were showing the airport there in D.C. They had the helicopters all lined up. But what was sitting in the background was really interesting because sitting in the background sits the Doomsday Jet, you know. And, that's not Air Force One. That's the one that it's a little different setup. It's in the event of an EMF. It's in the event of anything else. It has all analog gauges. It has that plane stays in the air no matter pretty much what. That's what it's designed for. It's hardened. It's available. But the fact that it's parked there in D.C. at the airport is, I don't know, significant. It doesn't just show up for no reason. So obviously, someone is taking some of this stuff kind of seriously, you know.
Yeah, well, and we've been talking about stuff. I mean, we've been talking about this and that for how long? We've been talking about the gangs that are in the United States, you know, the Tendre Aguagua, the MS-13, this, that. We've talked about the firearms that have been, you know, coming across the border, the ammunition, you know, you name it. I mean, basically, all these things that are... I don't know. It's stuff that's like leading up to civil war, so to speak. It's what are they going to do? What and how is it going to start? And you know what's going to happen? I mean, and I think that it's very possible that we're seeing. I'm not saying for sure, but it's one of those things is you got to think about it. You got to stop and think about it. It's like, okay, could we be watching the beginning of a civil war? And is it going to break out? Is it going to start in these 1800 cities? Is it going to start near a town near you? Are they going to start shooting people in Denver or Fort Collins you name it, Austin, Houston. What's going to happen? Is it going to happen closer to the border? Is it going to be coming across the border? We know that Mexico and that, you know, they've got a Jewish president of Mexico that is saying, you know, we want it back and basically feeding the fire, too, as far as with these illegals that are in the United States and talking about, I mean, they want to take land back. They want to do a land grab. And, you know, is it possible that, this is, you know, a border war that is happening in a civil war type situation? Does that sound crazy?
No. Not at all. And Pastor Peters preached a message, and off the top of my head, I don't remember the name of the message, but where he talked about Aztlan, this legendary fictional land that the Mexicans believe belonged to them. And it's huge. You know, it's all of California going into Oklahoma and Colorado and Texas and Arizona and New Mexico. And amongst the Mexican communist, this is something that they say is theirs. And one day they're going to rise up and come and take it back. And I know Pastor Peters, at least in one message, preached about that and taught about that. Of there are these people that believe this stuff, you know, and it goes back to the land of, is this our land or is this their land? And I know that's kind of a simple way of looking at it, Jason, but I mean, that's really what we're talking about, that this is our land. It's not their land. And they're making claims to something that is not theirs. And going back to what Tim was saying, as far as raising the Mexican flag, all that, there would be a time, you know, there was a time in this country that, you know, you raise up a Mexican flag like that, we're going to rip it out of the ground and do something about that. And I guess, are we going back to that? Are there going to be those people in this country that are willing to do that? And I think time's going to prove that out, whether we are or not.
Well, and I don't know whether there's any truth to it or not, but I heard a rumor that one of the goals of them was to, what, grab the Alamo or occupy the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear anything about that at all?
Yeah, they're moving, and because it's kind of fun to think about, and maybe fun's not the right word, but in the San Antonio area, and I shouldn't have said fun, but here's the deal. There's been protests all week in San Antonio, and it's been growing every day as far as the number of people coming out. A couple days ago, there was a huge rainstorm in the area, and I think actually 10 people died in flash flooding in the San Antonio area. So it was kind of God's hand of coming in and washing that out, where those protesters that were coming out for a couple of days were not able to. They got washed away, literally. And but today there are a lot of chatter going around that there's going to be protests in downtown San Antonio, and it sounds like they're going to be concentrating with doing their best to protect the Alamo, because there is chatter that they're going to march. They have not been permitted to protest at the Alamo, but there's a lot of stuff coming out that they're going to take to the street and march to the Alamo and take the Alamo back over.
Yeah, that's a symbolic thing. I mean, I'm sure that's symbolic, you know, but that shows that what they're saying is no, you know, we're going to take this back, you know, and we're going
right.
to control it. And it's like, maybe not. So I think it's interesting that a lot of these states are coming out. I know Texas has done it, Florida's done it, several other states have said you have a right to defend yourself. So we may actually be looking at, like you said, with the fact that people are, that enforcement or military assets would be scattered thin under certain scenarios, it may come down to people to take care of themselves to some degree. You know, I mean, there's a part there when you're in a car and they're blocking the road, trying to take you out of your car and burn your car or something, like it kind of is on your shoulders right there, you know, dialing 911 is not going to help you for a while. So,
well, good point, Tim. And I just want to point out too something that, you know, you don't need a governor or a sheriff coming out saying, hey, if you're gonna you know, riot and rob and pillage, then you know, let your we're gonna shoot and let your family know where they can pick up your remains. I mean, these are things that are being said. I've heard several things that have come out, and I just want to tell people, you don't need your governor to say that it's okay. You have a right to defend yourself no matter what. And if you don't do that and you don't protect your life, your family's life, with whatever is necessary to protect them, then you're not taking care of your family, and you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You don't need to have anybody give you permission. You've got a God-given right to take care of business. If these people are knocking at your door or attacking you in your car or whatever the situation is, it's use means that are necessary to take care of your family. And I think people need to remember that. We've got, people keep wanting to go back to their constitutional rights. We need to think about our God-given rights also. And those are, important. The Constitution is there to protect our God-given rights. And we need to think about, first and foremost, we've got God-given rights, and we are commanded to be armed, and there's a reason that, our Lord and Savior wanted us to be armed, and that was, it could be to protect ourselves, it could be an offensive move, or a defensive move. It just depends on the time, but we have got to, I want people to be thinking about that. And I want people to be thinking about, okay, what happens if, this breaks out in a town near me? What happens if they burn shut down the interstate? What happens if they shut down the highways? What happens if they, blow up a power plant? you know, we got to, and I don't say these things to try to scare people or anything. I want people to be aware. And I think that, you know, we're seeing the signs of the times, and we're seeing these things that are taking place, and they're coming to a town near you. I mean, looking at this map, it's basically the whole United States is covered with dots. And you've got to blow it up really, really big to find an area where there's not something that's taking place. And I'm not saying that, you know, this is the event. This is the big one. But if it's not this one, it could be the next one or the next one. And we've got a duty to be prepared. You know, people want to be called Christian soldiers, but they don't want to be a soldier. They don't want to be, you know, they don't want to prepare for a fight. And I think that, you know, as Christian soldiers, that's one of the things that we need to be thinking about is, you know, it could be a time to fight. It could be a time to protect ourselves, and it could be time to, you know, protect your neighbor, I don't know. All different kinds of things are just going through my head. What are your thoughts?
It's really excellent point, and I certainly agree with that.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Constitution's there to tell the government what they can't do. Our God-given rights are, they supersede it in every way. And, so I wholeheartedly agree with that. Well put.
I think it's a good time to talk about, with everything going on today across the country, and really, I don't think I can say it any better than what you just said, Jason, but what does that look like for our people? What does that look like for the remnant? And what should we be doing, not just for today of what's happening today, but with the idea that this is probably going to become the normal, maybe, through the summer of, you know,
right.
Should we expect more of this, you know, and what does that look like? Because kind of going along, and not for the fear porn or anything like that, but really just to say, you know, we talk about this being contrived. We talk about this being initiated, that it's not just something random that's happening. You know, Jason, you mentioned like the electrical systems, you know, the power stations and that sort of thing. It won't be long before they figure out if they go to the local Walmart distribution center and set it on fire, that's going to shut down the local food supply for weeks. And, you know, that sounds crazy, but that asymmetrical guerrilla warfare that we've talked about, that's what it's going to look like. They're going to go down, you know, and I think folks, if you don't know as far as infrastructure, how the country works, you know, there are substations for gasoline and diesel that these tanker trucks pull up to and fill up and take to the local gas station. And I'm here to tell you, they're not protected. They may have a 6-foot fence with a little bit of barbed wire around them and a couple of operators that are making the pumps work in these underground pipelines, but that's it. And if they wanted to walk in and take that over and just flip the switch and shut it down, gasoline goes away. And if I know these things, I promise you that these communist guerrillas know the same thing, and it's been talked about. And that's the sort of stuff that I could see happening. But that leads us into, what do we do? You know, we're not going to necessarily be able to control, you know, the Walmart distribution center from being shut down. And it may not be a fire. They just may walk in and take it over. You know, similar things happened back in the 70s with these communist Marxist terrorists. You know, they would just go in and take over places, and, you know, for 4, 5, 6 days at a time, it's non-operational. So, Jason, I guess the conversation maybe that I think would be good right now is, what do we do? What do we do to prepare ourselves and be ready for that? Because one of the things you were talking about, just end time stuff, is I know in Matthew 24, it talks about, you know, the ones who endure to the end will be saved. We're called to endure. You know, we have to make it through this stuff, and I want us to make it through successfully. So is now a good time? You know, with everything that's going on in the Middle East, we know fuel prices are going to go up. It happens every time. Are you stocked up on your fuel? Do you have it stored? Are you ready to go? So I guess I'm just going to
I think there's a lot of stuff that people need to be doing, and you know, I mean, and I know that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be you know, just, you know, well, I'm not scared. Well, you're not supposed to be scared, and we don't want to scare you. We want you to be equipped with wisdom and knowledge and understanding so that you're not scared. And I think that that's I think that the number one, having the mindset, is, you know, that we've got to have is greater are the forces that are for us than the forces that are against us. And we've got to breathe it. We've got to, you know, to believe it. We've got to faith it. We've got to, you know, it's got to be part of us. We've got to have the right mindset, number one. Number two, it's like, yeah, you see the writing on the walls. You know, it's, I think now's the time. It's like, yeah, be stocked up on food. Be stocked up on fuel. Fuel prices are going to go up. Who knows if the supply chains, you know, happen. It's like, we haven't had very many times here that I've seen that you couldn't get fuel, but I've seen them. I've seen them where you go to the gas pump and it's, you know, hey, we don't have any fuel. It's happened several times around here. So yeah, absolutely. Be stocked up on fuel. Be stocked up on your water. You know, you never know. It's like we've got to think about these people as being terrorists. And what do terrorists do? You know, they like to, you know, poison water supplies and, you know, municipal water supplies and shut down supply chains. Like you said, you know, they'll, you know, shut down a Walmart distribution center or burn it to the ground just to keep people from getting fed, even if it means they're not going to have any food, you know, spray paint or fire starters. It's, you know... We've got to think, you know, and I think it's just, you know, being prepared, you know, be a survivalist. It's part of being a Christian soldier. It's, you know, be prepared for, you know, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen in your air? What do you need? What do you need to survive? And what are you going to, you know, to use to protect yourself? And as far as I'm concerned, the best, you know, they call them riot guns for a reason. And I think that a 12-gauge shotgun is... is a phenomenal weapon. And, you know, I'm watching these videos of these streets of LA and seeing what's happened. And if I had my choice of weapon, I would want a 12 gauge shotgun with double up buck. Now, that's my personal preference. I'd want to have a sidearm on a, you know, a gun belt or something like that as a backup recourse. But I'm seeing the way that these things are taking place, and it's like, I would feel very good if I had a 12-gauge shotgun. And the thing I like about a 12-gauge shotgun, and I know we're kind of shifting gears, but the thing about a 12-gauge shotgun is I can take an 870 shotgun, and in 2 minutes, I can teach somebody how to use it. And they are armed with a very deadly, very lethal force. I mean, they basically got claymores in their hand. And you don't have to be a good shot with double op buck to be able to hit a target. I've seen some people that never shot a gun in their life, and you hand them one of those with double op buck and, you know, have them shoot something, and it's like, yeah, if they miss, you might be in trouble. But I'm just saying, it's and the thing that I like about, you know, a shotgun, they're easy to load. Yeah, okay, it's got some recoil, but it ain't going to hurt you. It ain't going to, you know, it ain't that bad. And, you know, you don't have to be a good shot, and it's just very effective. It causes a lot of damage. I think that having a, you know, shotgun around with, you know, a coffee can of shells is a really a good thing to have. And I think people need to be, I mean, you know, if you've got something, I mean, yeah, you see this stuff happening, know how to use it, know where, I don't know how many people that I've talked to that are like, oh yeah, I got a shotgun, I know where my shotgun is, but I don't know, I got to think about where the shells are. It don't do you any good to have a shotgun and know that, you know, it's in my bedroom closet if you don't know where the shells are. Anyway, sorry, I got off on a rant, but
no, that's awesome. I was gonna throw it out that you talked about recoil with a 12-gauge shotgun. In the moment, adrenaline kind of acts as a recoil pad for that recoil. You know, you're not gonna think about it till later, so don't worry about it. Along those lines, and just I'm going to throw this out because this week I had this conversation with somebody. You're talking about shotguns, and it surprises me that there are people who have defensive weapons in their home that they don't keep loaded. That they think in the moment they're just going to, like you said, locate those shells, load it up, and have it ready to go. And those are precious seconds. And I mean, you guys are you're both shooters. And what's y'all's opinion on that? You know, my message is that's not a good plan.
No, it's not a good plan at all. I mean, it's like I try to do that. I try to do the mental exercises too. It's like, you know, think about it. You know, where is my gun?
Yeah.
If something happened right now, where am I going to go to get to my firearm to be able to protect myself? You know, whether it's, you know, do you keep it in the nightstand next to the bed? Is it in the top drawer of your dresser? Is it on the top shelf in your closet? Is it in the kitchen? I mean, or all of the above, depending on whose house you're in. You've got to be able to think about that, and time is of the essence. If somebody's kicking in your door and somebody's coming through your door or coming through a window, you've got seconds to take action, and you need to be taking action now. Don't go and try to find a box of ammo and then try to, you know, go to your gun. I know people that have got guns locked up in gun safes and ammo in other safes. And to me, yep. It's like, I mean, to me, that's insanity. But, we live in, you know, different worlds, and everybody's got different opinions on things like that. And, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. But I think that, you know, we're coming into the times where I try to, I mean, my wife, my children, everybody knows, you know, where there's a firearm and they can get to it. And we've got a thing that, you know, we've talked about, and it's called Go Get Bob. And somebody comes to the door and you don't know who it is and you think that it's a threat. Hey, can you grab Bob? Somebody's here for him. And everybody knows that, you know, when somebody says something about Bob, it's okay. Where's a gun? Somebody needs something. And, you know, it's kind of a code word that, as soon as you hear it, everybody perks up and everybody gets on the same page. And I'm still working on trying to get my youngins to understand it completely, but they're getting it.
Right. Well, and think about the people who tell you that it's a terrible idea to have any of that stuff read. They're your friends, right? They're the people who, it's such a ludicrous example, we're to be in a state of readiness. I mean, even our Bible tells us they're ready in season and out of, it's like, and that's not just about any particular thing, but that's a big deal. I mean, and is there danger with some of this? And, you know, well, what if somebody, the what ifs are what always get me. What if? And when I hear people start saying that, I always just kind of roll my eyes inside, because it's like, yeah, well, you know, what if you don't get it? What if there's as many what ifs back to theirs as there are the ones that go that way? So, you should definitely have something, available to you within a reasonable response time. That's, and I guess everybody has to make that decision themselves.
Going back to the book of Luke, you know, it's when a strong man is fully armed, he guards his own house and his possessions are secure. And fully armed to me means, you know, got to be loaded, got to be ready to go. It's one thing to be armed. It's another thing to be fully armed. And scripture says fully armed. So
that's a good point.
That's kind of my thought on it.
No, I never thought about that. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Uh-huh. Yep.
It does. It's really a good comeback or a good summarization of how we're supposed to
do. No, and I'll ask you, man. So I know this is and switching gears, and this is kind of off the subject, but, you know, there's a lot of people like, okay, so if you're carrying a 1911, you know, do you carry it cocked and locked? I know that there's a lot of people that say absolutely that's the way that you you have to carry a 1911. You know, I like a 1911. I like a Glock. I carry a 43X. I do not carry one in the chamber. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons that I don't carry one in the chamber, but mostly it's because of, you know, we've got a lot of children coming over to the house and stuff like that, and different neighbors' kids and cousins and different stuff. And I'm not worried about my children around firearms at all, but because they've been trained. But I do worry, I don't worry, but I think about other people's children and about them not being around, not being familiar with firearms. So, you know, that's why I don't like to keep one in the chamber. I keep a magazine in it, but I don't keep one in the chamber because then, you know, my training was is anytime, no matter what happens, you pick up a gun. If you don't know, if you pick up a semi-automatic and you don't know if it's got one in the chamber, the first thing that you do is rack one and put one in the chamber. You know, if it already had one in there, okay, you drop a shell in the ground, but at least you know. Then you're ready to take the shot. What's your guys' thoughts on that? That was, I just, you know, I'm not 100%, I'm not sure what, you know, what the proper thing to do is.
I think this is going to be a Ford versus Chevrolet.
is that what it is? Okay.
All right. So how I do things, and, you know, I'm, the best thing, and I really mean this, is like I'm not sure there's a right way or a wrong way. I think it's all conditional on what's going on in the moment with you. So me, I have pistols that are in the safe that have loaded magazines but an empty chamber that are ready to go in that condition. But if I have a pistol that is in my control on my person that is not accessible to anyone else without a fight, I have a round in the chamber.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good, yeah.
Yeah. So if I take a pistol out of the safe to carry, I will chamber a round and put it in a holster. And I know that it is now safe and secure. And when I offload that weapon back into the safe, the magazine comes out, the round comes out of the chamber, I top off the mag, I put it back in the safe. So I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
To me, it's the manual of arms of I'm storing a safe weapon, but when I take it out of the safe for personal carry, I'm putting it into the condition to be ready to work.
That makes a lot of sense.
And I would say that that's pretty much the way I handle it, although I don't have any small people around to worry about anymore. So there are certain places or instances where I do have some that are ready. They're available, but if it's on my person, I'm usually ready to go. I mean, as far as there's one in battery, and you know, I'm like you, Jason. If I take it out, if I have time, if I were to just take it out and have time, I'm going to chamber check it anyways. But it's still one of those situations where we're ready to roll if it's in my control. If it's put away, if it's in the safe, if it's in a storage condition, why it's not hot. You know, I mean, it's got them in it, and I have some that aren't loaded. If you pick one up at my place, and all my adult family members know that, if you pick one up and it hasn't got anything in it, don't take it. Find a different one. There's something not right about that one. So, yeah. You know, that's the way it works around here. But, yeah.
So. Yeah, I can see that.
You know, and it's an old way of training, but that whole condition one, condition two, condition three thing, and that's really what we're talking about is, for me, you know, it's condition one. It's ready to go, and I'm phobic. If I pick up people's, you know, if someone's showing me something, it's always press checking, right? You're making sure that there's not one chambered or there is one chambered. And, but yeah, condition three, if it's in safe storage somewhere, but if it's going to ride on my person, it's in condition one, ready to go. And the same thing applies to long guns too. It's not just pistols. And there's a huge, you know, going back, and we're talking about shotguns with 870s and that sort of thing of, you know, what do you do there? How do you keep one in the chamber? Or do you rack that round in the chamber and then top off from a side saddle or from that coffee can of shells? And, we've mainly been talking about pistols, but what about rifles and shotguns? How do you let those ride?
I'm the same way. It's like, if I got something riding around in the truck, I usually don't have one in the chamber. If I have it sitting next to the bed, and that's what I got is an 870 that's next to my bed. I got a side saddle on it that's got, you know, five or six shells in it. I've got, you know, the tube loaded, but I do not keep one in the chamber. And, you know, I know that I pick that shotgun up, I rack one in the chamber. I can rack one in when I'm headed towards the door. I mean, it doesn't take me very long. That's, you know, I do that just because, you know, it, somebody goes into the bedroom and it's like, I've seen it happen before where, you know, somebody will take it off of safety and pull the trigger. And it's not just kids. It's people that just are not familiar with guns.
So here's a question. That's my thought.
Right.
Both of you guys are shooters, and I know that. And I grew up with the idea of gun box ready when it comes to shotguns, especially pump shotguns. And that is an empty chamber with the trigger depressed and the firing pin down
so that
I don't have to manipulate.
Exactly.
Right. So that I'm not hitting a slide release. To me, I feel that's completely safe. And that's the way I was brought up with those. Do y'all do the same thing?
Yes, exactly.
Yes. And the other thing I will say is there is no sound that strikes fear in anybody who knows anything about firearms, like the sound of a pump shotgun being racked or somebody.
Amen.
I mean, they will usually dirty themselves. It's like, oh boy, we got to leave right now, you know. So that's a sound you don't want to hear.
bringing that full circle to something that Jason was talking about, Tim, is you can yell, "This is an unlawful assembly, please disperse," till you're blue in the face. And if there's a large group of stupid brown people with Mexican flags, you know, the racking of a few 12-gauge shotguns, that works a lot better than any command that you could give.
It's a real hearing aid.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what my dad told me back in the day as far as that went. So and I have seen it be true. I mean, people are like, "Ooh, you know what that sound was?"
barking dogs and pump shotguns. Those are great deterrents. But before we run out of time, I just want to jump in and say this, that I know we're talking about these protests across the country, and no doubt the big protests are going to be in the big population centers. But I really believe, you know, Tim often points out this asymmetrical warfare mindset of the enemy and these guerrilla tactics. I do think that we're getting into a time where we will see these knuckleheads and their nonsense start spilling over into some of the smaller places, some of the smaller population centers across the country. And we don't need to have the mindset of that's Denver's problem or that's Houston's problem or that's Omaha's problem. I think in a very real way, it'll become our problem
exactly.
as well. And we need to keep that mindset going into this summer of, and it may not be a group of people marching down your country road, but it may be a group of people taking over your county seat. And, you know, that's going to affect EMS response, you know, sheriff's office response, the local grocery store, you know, like Jason say, you know, if they go down to the municipal water system or the electrical system or whatever. And we don't need to have that spirit about us and that mindset of it's their problem, not mine. Well, I think those days may be over. I think we're getting into a time where it's going to be all of our problem.
Yeah.
Well, and
well,
I think
they're looking for it.
I was just going to say that, you know, it reminds me of loving your neighbor as yourself. I mean, it's one of the second commandments. I want to start off by reading Mark 12:30. It says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. And I think that that's part of what you're talking about is, you know, obeying the greatest commandments. It's, you know, loving your neighbor as yourself. And if we don't love, I mean, this is the land that God gave us. And, you know, this is the new Jerusalem. This is, you know, we are his people. This is his land. And if we don't love our neighbors that, you know, that are getting attacked by, you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's a force foreign or domestic, and we aren't concerned about that, then we're violating this commandment. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it is our people. You know, when it's talking about neighbors, we're talking about loving our people. And I think the Mexicans should love their people in Mexico. I don't think they should be here.
In Mexico, good point. Yeah, exactly.
That's my viewpoint of that is I want them to be prideful of being a Mexican. And if they're so doggone prideful, the best place to be a Mexican is Mexico. And it's not here. The other thing I wanted to say really fast is I don't know what business people may have today. We all have to do, you know, our everyday business, whether it's the grocery store, the hardware store, the feed store, whatever. But be mindful, you know, listen to the radio, take a look at the news. If you're in Fort Collins, Colorado, and they decide at Colorado State today they're going to burn everything down, wait till Monday to go get your chicken feed. Today might not be the day to go to town to do that. And just kind of monitor the situation wherever you're at and don't put yourself unnecessarily in a position that you don't need to be in. Don't be curious. You know, curiosity killed the cat, right? Don't go down and take a look at that just to see what's going on. If you want to watch it on your computer. Don't watch it firsthand. There's no need to, I guess when we're talking about preparing and mindsets and tactical mindsets, you know, one of the greatest pieces of tactical advice I've ever been given is if you don't want problems, don't go to the problem. And, you know, don't put yourself in a situation that you don't want to be in. The problem will find you. And that's when you should be prepared to take action. Don't make the problem. Let the problem find you. And chances are, if you go looking for the problem, you're just part of the problem in itself. And I don't know. I hope that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I told several people that I talked to, too, earlier in this week. I said I wouldn't be going to Denver this weekend. You know, stay out of the cities.
Yeah.
To me, it's just, you know, oh, what, are you scared? No, I'm not scared. I'm trying to be smart. There's a difference. You know, if I had to go to Denver, would I, you know, yes, I would if I had to, but I don't have to. I can put it off, and go wait and see what happens. I mean, it's, you know, they're having, they filed a permit for it, and it's kind of funny, but they said that there's going to be 8,000 protesters, but they're gathering next to the interstate. And the plan is to shut the interstate down, which, you know, there's I-25 runs north and south from Denver to northern Colorado, all through the state of Colorado. But it basically they want to shut. And when I-25 gets shut down, it's a matter of, you know, minutes. And you've got traffic that's backed up 30 miles. It takes something like that could, I mean, you could get stuck there and you could be stuck in traffic for hours, if not days. I mean, it's happened where, you know, it's been shut down for, you know, 2 days. You don't know, but it's just, to me, it's just, yeah, like you said, don't go to the problem. If you think there's going to be problems over there, stay away from it. You know, just, to me, that's just being smart.
Yeah. Now, avoiding it is an action, too, you know. I mean,
yeah.
You bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bet. You know, we I guess it was a couple Saturdays ago, we talked about the zombie apocalypse and people having the mindset of it's coming and it's just going to be hell on earth.
I think there are people out there that would willingly throw themselves into that. And to me, that's not being prepared. That's not having the right mindset. You know, the best way, one of the best preps that we can have is the ability to avoid and to see what's coming and not to be a part of it. And I don't know. I don't know if that's the right way of saying that, but we are set apart. We are different than the world. And part of that should be our mindset. If the rest of the world is running into this fire, let's be smarter than that. And I think I'll stay over here and not get a brick in the head. Because I promise you folks, our people, if we run out there, we're going to stick out like a sore thumb in this. And, I think about Reginald Denny, you know, back in, what was that, 92, the truck driver driving through Los Angeles. And that poor dude was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And he was a white guy behind the cab of this tractor trailer. And we know what happened to him. And it was just for the sheer reason that he was white doing his job at the wrong time at the wrong place. And we don't need to put ourselves into those positions.
Yeah,
I think that's really good advice.
Well, and that really lets the wind out of their sails. Yeah, it's not there to. Yeah, they need fodder. So if you don't be fodder, I mean, it's like,
I have the same mindset, Jim. Yeah. No, that's you make yourself a target, and if you don't want to get shot at, don't become a target. And that's what they do. We don't want to do that. Don't do that.
And I had this sent to me several times over the last couple of days, and it says, if rioters come to your area, please remember, don't be a litter bug, pick up your brass. And so I don't know. I've got that sent to me about six times, so I think people must know me. But no, I'll remember to pick up my brass. I appreciate it, guys. I do like to reload, and I'll pick up my brass. I'll even pick up my shotgun holes if I got time. But I think we are out of time. And go ahead, Will.
Nope, that was it. I'm good.
And I just wanted to say, Remnant, thanks for being here. Remember to check us out on Spotify, Rumble, like, share, subscribe. Got a couple interviews up there that are recent that are just fantastic, and people are sharing those, and it's getting out. I really enjoyed our interview that me and Will conducted with Phil Turney, and just getting really good feedback. Also, the one that we did with Simon Roche, it's still people are still talking about that and sharing that, so I appreciate that. It does help us when you share that stuff. And we've got a couple more interviews that we've got lined up that hopefully we will have done here in the next week or two. So just wanted to let you know about that. And thanks for being here. Thanks, guys, for your time this morning.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
And I think we'll go out with a song. This one is, I think this is appropriate, No King, No King But King Jesus.
Amen.
When the British armies came from across the bounding main to attack our native shores in their sailing ships of war to establish tyranny by the orders of a tyrant king, Paul Revere cried his alarms and the people took up arms and they fired up their guns and the Greens of Lexington. Soon the battles would be won and the bells of liberty would ring. Those men who fought to keep us free were not afraid to die. They drew their strength and courage from his power upon high and cried this battle cry, No King, No King, No King but King Jesus, the Messiah. No King, No King, No King but King Jesus, the Holy One of Israel, the Holy One of Israel. Through the toil and the tears in the last 100 years, we have fainted from the fight for his liberty and life. We've been blinded by the lies, so we hardly know what's right from wrong. As the anti-Christian hordes and the global overlords now surround his holy saints in the camp United States, just like Israel of old, we now find ourselves in Babylon. So now's the time for all good men to seek his face on high and bow.
You are listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network with Pastor Peter J. Peters, made possible by the tithes and offerings of the faithful. If you would like to be one of those who help to get needed truths out to others,